there, and welcome to Open Mic here on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Rowan County Judge Executive Harry Clark. Harry, thanks so much for being on the show.
Good morning, Leanne. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
It is another week of change this week here in Rowan County and across the nation, and definitely across the state of Kentucky. Earlier this week, we received new recommendations from the governor, and that's going to change some things for the way that people live day-to-day life in, across the state. But here in Rowan County, we are still in the red zone. I didn't see the numbers last night, but I feel like they started going down, but then I knew that they were back up again yesterday, or on Wednesday, rather.
Yes, we had 20 cases yesterday.
Now, this I know the last time you and I talked about this briefly with the number of cases going up in the county, the big thing is we can't really figure, like, pinpoint one group or one gathering. The number of cases, you know, kind of going up so quickly can't be pinpointed. We don't really know how all these different small groups, or all these different individuals, rather, are being infected.
Well, Leanne, you know, we've been fairly fortunate in Rowan County to be shielded for a number of months from this. And a lot of that is due to one, you know, we're a rural community, but we also have had some really good participation from a lot of folks that helps us keep this numbers down. But, you know, we currently have, since the beginning of this COVID in March, we've had 688 cases, 533 is fully recovered, two unfortunate deaths, and then we have 153 active cases today that the health department is actually working. And our seven-day rolling total, we're at 116. So we're definitely solid in the red. 42 is the trip number for going into the red. So you can see we're double digits into the red. The new mandates, actually, you know, before, I think they've always been recommendations from the governor. And I think he made that clear yesterday that, you know, it's changing from recommendations. Now it's going to go to some requirements, some pretty hard fact. They're going to start enforcing it. So here in Rowan County, a couple weeks ago, and I shouldn't say Rowan County, the District Health Department hired an individual a couple weeks ago, and they finally getting him up to speed. And his job is masking, is to go out and look for compliance in the retailer business, in the stores. So what his job was for the past week was to encourage the employers to get the employees to wear their mask. It's hard to, you know, tell an individual that's coming off the street to come in to put a mask on if the employees don't. So he's been working on that, and I can see a difference. Really, I can see a difference in the week that he's worked in some of the places. But I think it'll change now. It's going to be more, you know, they'll go to some type of real enforcement with some teeth in it for this next phase. And to be quite honest with you, we got to do something to get this under control. Like I said, we've kind of lived a pretty sheltered life here, but our healthcare workers are getting, they're getting tired. They've been battling this battle. Well, we took a little break from it never take a break, but some of us relaxed some, they haven't. So they've been constantly working hours and hours. The health department folks work 7 days a week, every single day they work. So, you know, we're going to overwhelm our health care system. And we're going to be in real trouble if we start getting if we don't get these case numbers under control. So we're going to have to take some very, very, very stern and stiff action to get it to. And we probably won't decrease the case numbers, but we hopefully will flatten that curve again, or you can call it what you want. But we're going to have to get it at least in check, or we'll overwhelm our healthcare.
Now, you said that they are going to do some, the mandate, they're going to have to do some enforcement and making sure people are compliant with the new mandates. And those mandates, just to reiterate for our listeners, first of all, the mask mandate is still in effect. They don't want more than 8 people gathering together, and only if a total of 2 households, that's all. So, for example, if I was going to go to Thanksgiving at my parents' house, which I'm not, but if I were, it would just be my family and then my mom and dad. That's 2 households. That's less than 8 people. But if my brother wanted to come with his family, which is a family of 5, that would be too many. So that's one of the other mandates. And then also, they're getting rid of indoor seating or indoor eating for restaurants. I guess my big question for the county and for you, Harry, is who is the they that's going to be doing the enforcement? Is there going to be law enforcement going to take this on? What's going to happen?
No, I think what you'll see, Leanne, is what's been in the past. I think you'll see the health department through the environmental services and through, and there's another, and I just forgot the term of the individuals, but Frankfurt, but they deal with businesses. And so I think what you'll find is they will go around and do these kind of enforcements, because to be honest, the sheriff department's overwhelmed with doing what they try to do on a daily basis. So does the city's police department. So I think what you'll see is the health department getting involved in this enforcement.
And I guess we'll have to see, because the governor hasn't really released any guidance on what kind of teeth these mandates are going to have, as far as like, are there going to be fines? What's the amount? Or are people going to get tickets? I guess we're waiting to hear a lot about that.
Well, he references the KRS 39A, and in 39A there is some references and how you escalate these up. You can ratchet this up to include, from a simple warning to get people to comply to you can fine them. But at the end of the day, the health department actually has the authority to close the business, and nobody wants that to happen. I mean, and, this is not something to close businesses. This is something to try to get this these COVID numbers under control. The big thing I think will be the restaurants and bars, no indoor seating. That'll all be outdoors, which that'll hurt because it's going, we're in cold weather. They are with that. They also announced there is some funding that they will be distributing to these businesses to help them. It'll certainly not compensate for all their loss, but it'll help them keep the doors open until we can get this turned around and get a vaccine. But I think there's like $40 million that's been allocated towards this from the CARES funding to assist the businesses, and there's an application process. And so hopefully we'll be able to, a lot of our small businesses will be able to get into that application process and get some support. I can tell you probably from sitting in my seat, there's probably nobody going to come around and check the number of people at your Thanksgiving table. That's just not something that we're going to be capable of doing. And we're going to have our hands full trying to look at retail businesses and these other things. So I don't want to make light of what the governor said. The 4s, the 8, and the 2 families. But I can reasonably be assured that you won't see the judge exec knocking on your door, doing a head count, or peeping through your windows to look to see how many you got at your Thanksgiving dinner table. But we will I will encourage the businesses to require a mask on entry and to also make sure that we're following the other guidelines on limited number of individuals at different events. So I will do my very best to support all those efforts.
I know that recently the Big Sandy prison over in Morgan County had an outbreak of COVID-19. There was a huge line at St. Clair for people going through to get tested, and a lot of their inmates and employees were positive for COVID. And although that didn't really affect Rowan County, the county jail here so far has been pretty lucky when it comes to COVID.
We've been very fortunate, Leanne, and hats off to the law enforcement officials and to West Cold Iron. They screen these folks pretty good before they put them in jail. West Cold Iron's crew does a really good job. Apparently, with just sitting here in my office, I can tell you we haven't had any cases, so they must be doing a pretty doggone good job because everybody else has. but both correctional complexes in Elliott County and also in Morgan County have had several cases. And it's very unfortunate because it's a closed setting, as you know, and it's really hard to keep under control. But to be to be quite honest, they've done fairly well. They've got a lot of inmates there, and they've kept it to what they have. So my hat's off to their ability to step up and do the things that they need to do.
We want to talk a little bit about the fiscal court meeting, the regular meeting that happened earlier this week. First of all, let's talk a little bit about the floodplain coordinator and the recycling center. There's going to be some staffing changes.
Yes, we've looked at this once before when the position came open at the recycling center for a manager or a director, and we just wasn't quite ready to do it. It kind of happened pretty quick, I think. So this time around, the position's come open again. Gardner May's done a great job for us for nearly a year now, believe it or not. And but he has got some things that he wants to do. He retired from Morehead State University. So he's got some things that he realizes he really wants to do. So he too is going to resign that position effective, I think, in January 1. So he has willingly stayed on to help transition a new individual over there. So our solid waste floodplain coordinator is a perfect fit. A lot of other counties do that. They also manage the recycling center. And I think it's some new name will be called Environmental Services Manager. Maybe we'll tag that to accomplish all of those tasks. So he will physically be moving his office over to the recycling center. So he'll be available there to monitor the recycling center and manage it, as well as still continuing doing the floodplain solid waste coordinator duties. And that, of course, he will work for the county. And of course, the recycling board will still have certainly inputs to how the recycling center is operated, and they will have direct input to him for that position. So we're going to do it on a basis up until June, and we're going to see how it works. And we may need to tweak a few things, and hopefully it'll work out well. It's another one of those. It's a reorganization for the betterment of the community. It'll save us a little bit of money in the short term. In the long run, it'll allow us to use some of that money that we're saving to hire some more help over there, because it's a really a tough job, and a lot of stuff goes on over there when the recycling is busy. So I think it's a good deal.
And on that note, we're going to take a quick break here on Open Mic. We'll be right back after this.
The Best of Car Talk is back on WMKY.
And is the noise like this?
It's almost like a noise.
you know what that noise is? The transmission grinding itself into pieces.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, isn't that good news?
The Best of Car Talk, Saturday mornings at 10, Sunday mornings at 6 on WMKY 90.3 FM.
Welcome back to Open Mic here on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Harry Clark, the judge executive of Rowan County. Harry, thanks again for spending time with us today. We're talking a little bit about the fiscal court meeting that happened earlier this week. It was the regular scheduled meeting conducted via Zoom. And although that's been a new thing just this year, I really like it because I can sit at my desk and drink my coffee and keep up with what's happening. And I think a lot of people in the community are being more involved and paying closer attention to what's happening within a municipal government, within the county government, within the city government, just because it's easy to tune in.
You know, it really is. And I've always, even when I was running for office, said we'd be very transparent. And we were working towards, and I've worked towards this for the first year, trying to get everything out. But the COVID just kind of pushed things a little faster and a little quicker ahead of the schedule. So, yeah, I think it's great. You know, our fiscal court meetings were very lightly attended, if you could say the least, in our regular meetings in the courthouse. But when we went to live streaming, you know, you see there's as many as 60, 70 people tuned in watching this. And that's really good, because it's important for the people to know how their taxpayers are being spent. And the discussion goes along with how it is spent. It's not just willy-nilly done. There's a lot of discussion on it. So it's working out very well for us.
And speaking of how money is spent, one of the people who attended the meeting virtually was Dr. Scott Davison, who works for the university as a professor and a chair of one of the departments. But also he is very... he's very active within the community, and he came with a couple people to discuss the Kentucky Folk Arts Center.
Yes, he did. He came, him and Julie came, talked to us about the Folk Arts Center. He had asked me a couple weeks ago if he could get on the agenda for the court. They were trying to, they have created a plan, I think as most people have heard during the fiscal court discussion, they came up with a plan that they're going to try to put the Folk Arts Center back on course and be able to maintain it, have it open, have a curator, have all the things that we should have with it. You know, it's a part of Eastern Kentucky that we would love to hang on to, but when the funding started getting tight, you know, it was, you had to make decisions and tough decisions on what was needed funded and what was nice to be funded. So he came and asked, and he didn't ask for a lot of money. We had kept it in the budget, the fiscal court. We had kept $5,000 in the budget for the Folk Arts Center, just in case somebody came along with an idea and a plan, and it came to fruition. So we were happy to contribute to $5,000 to the Folk Arts Center, and we'll see if their plan works and how it goes forward.
And then also there was some discussion about longevity pay for the employees of the county. I know a lot of people are a little confused about what exactly does that mean? Because it's not a raise.
It's a longevity increase or amount of money is a one-time deal. And it's not a bonus. It is illegal to give bonuses. But you can pay them based on their longevity and kind of loyalty to the county. And if you recall, we had a 2.5% pay raise in the fiscal budget that we're in now. But because of COVID, we had to completely scrap that whole budget, back it all out. And we were probably real close to some folks in our county government are just like everybody else. They're always, you know, there could be a better job somewhere. So in reality, what we're trying to do is just keep the pace with some other things. But these folks have been loyal through this whole process. They've worked, our ambulance people, the jail folks, road departments, everybody's worked their tails off. But we couldn't give them that 2.5% raise in this, but we could give them the little longevity pay raise, which totaled out to be cost a total amount of $68,000, which is fairly cheap for being able to help. You know, cost of living has went up, as everybody knows that, just the same as to the county workers as it has to anyone else. So we were very, very appreciative of all their efforts, and we wanted to reward them with a little bit of money. And it was a very little money each individual, but it was a little.
Well, every little bit helps in this time, I'm sure. The fiscal court also discussed the new EMS building. There's a modification to the build proposal and also an update on the building progress and about some of the furnishings. Tell me a little bit about what's happening with that project.
Well, the contractor is working away at getting the bunker. I call it the bunker that we're going to house the ambulances in to keep a tornado Category 5 from ripping the ambulances up and destroying them. So they're working away at the bunker, the actual office complex that was a part of the old university. There's a few modifications we're going to make to it to make it accommodating for eventually the road department, our emergency management folks, subdivision coordinator, as well as all the EMS staff. So there's just a few modifications in the old office complex. And then, of course, they're working away on the new ambulance service building. And so it's all working. It's coming together. We need to figure out some furnishings for the new facility. We'd went out and I'd got some price quotes, and quite frankly, it scared me. So we went back and we're going to get some more price quotes. But they're just a few modifications. We want a few more doors taken out and taken off, and a couple more openings and a little bit more, a few more plug-ins here and there, but it's not a big modification at all. I just wanted the fiscal court to allow me the authority to go out and ask for someone to come in and do those things.
Mm-hmm. And what's the timeline now as far as when is that bunker going to be done that you can start housing the ambulances in there?
You know, of course, COVID slowed everything down, but the permits are a little slower to come now because Frankfurt, you know, is half staff and working from home. So we've got a few permits we need to get. But I think, you know, maybe still, I'm still hoping for the January timeline that we'll be able to move into it and everything will be done and moved into it and ready to roll. One thing about the ambulance service that was a huge help was Jimmy Hampton. I worked pretty hard on a grant application for a new emergency generator, which will power all of that. And that's a huge a dollar amount that the county will only have to pay like 12% of. Wow. So that's really good. And then it's something that we needed. And Jimmy was able to reach out for that and get that grant approved. So
it's not easy in this time of pandemic to get anything approved, much less a big grant like that.
It's not.
Now, we're almost out of time here on Open Mic, but I did want to touch base really quickly about the TIF district. There's a new proposed TIF district currently right across from the Kroger Plaza, where there is currently a trailer park there, and there's some property back towards the back. And a group has proposed to come in and build a new multi-use facility that's going to have restaurants and shopping, places to shop, things like that. The group that originally designed Hamburg in Lexington, that's something that most of us are familiar with. What was the update for the fiscal court on that project?
Well, they're really wanting to move forward on this very quick, and they want to have everything closed out, paperwork done by December. From the fiscal court standpoint, we really, nothing's in our hands yet that we have to sign. We've done some negotiating, if you will, for what we would contribute in, as far as property tax and payroll tax and those kind of things. So those numbers are out there to the developer, and they seem to be agreeable to them. So we're waiting on the city to go ahead and accept this. City's got the lead on this. When the city accepts it and does their first reading on it, then the county will follow suit with whatever requirement we have. I think we'll have to have a resolution and probably a couple different readings on some things. But we're excited because it's going to bring, some different restaurants, not better restaurants, but some different restaurants to, we think. Nothing's been committed, but we think we'll have some different options on some food service, and it's also some different shopping. So I think it's really going to be good not only for work, there's about 280 jobs associated with it, but it'll also be good for this region in tourism, traffic, hotels, all those other things that everybody would like to have. So I think it's a really good deal for all of us.
Now, the TIF district that's in the city limits has been discussed a lot recently. It seems like we've been talking about that TIF district forever, trying to get a hotel downtown, and a lot of discussion. That's taken a really long time, and that project is still in the works. But you indicated during the meeting that you think this particular TIF district project is going to move a lot faster.
There's a huge difference between the two TIF districts. The TIF district downtown is create the TIF district and then hope you get some investors to come in to build what you're anticipating to build, which was the parking garage and a hotel. The one out here at 32 and 64, that one is the individual has the money to develop this. He's just looking for some help with the infrastructure, the sewer, the water, those kind of things. But he has the money to develop this project himself. So there's a huge difference between the two. He's going to build it and then hope that the tenants come. And in the other case, they were looking for the tenants before they built.
And unfortunately, that's all the time we have here on Open Mic. Judge Executive Harry Clark from here in Round County, I really appreciate you spending time with us today.
I appreciate you, Leanne, and I just ask all the listeners, please, let's just stay on the course here. Let's re-engage and let's wear a mask and do the things that we're required to do, because we do not want to overwhelm our health care facilities or our healthcare professionals. And we've got a long way to go until we get to the vaccine. And the vaccine is coming, but it's not here today and it's not going to be here tomorrow. So we have still got to hunker down and do what we got to do to prevent this from spreading. And I really appreciate everybody's help.
Thanks for tuning in to Open Mic. Our show is produced by Greg Jenkins, and our theme music is Turtle in the Creek, composed by Galen Green and performed by The Wooks. Produced by Moorhead State Public Radio with the generous support of listeners just like you. We'll see you next Friday.